Here in the U.S., we all experienced those early days of the COVID-19 pandemic as it came to us by way of news stories. These were reports that seemed so far away, like they didn't have much to do with us at the time. But imagine if you were there in Wuhan, China, when the outbreak began. Now imagine you're on the front line. You're a nurse, you're an orderly, and you're watching your hospital fill up. And you don't really know much about this virus. You don't know how contagious or how deadly. And this is the moment the director Hao Wu's new film is documenting. It's called 76 Days. It's about those first 76 days in Wuhan's hospitals where exhausted medical professionals were operating blind, basically, unsure just how close they could get to the people they were trying to care for.
The film opens with a scene of a nurse fully covering multiple layers of PPEs running down the hallway. And then she stopped right in front of a hospital room. The door is closed. And she just desperately cried, "Papa." We quickly learned that her father had just passed away. And this nurse who works in the same hospital wanted to say goodbye to him for the last time. But her colleagues just restrained her, preventing her from jumping in the room and to touch the dead body of the father. That was at the very, very beginning of the lockdown, and very little was known at that time about how dangerous or how transmissible this virus was. So her colleagues were trying to do her a favor by making sure she stayed safe. By the same time, as a daughter, she so desperately wanted to say goodbye, but she couldn't. All she could do was following the dead body at a long distance and well before they drove away.
Baba! Baba!
That scene go directly to your heart to tell you how horrible, how tragic, how heart-wrenching this whole lockdown was. Usually we see a scene like that in some kind of apocalyptic film. But, you know, with COVID-19, that's the real story that happened first in Wuhan, but all over the world later on.
Why do you think people should see this? Like, why seeing something like this is so important in the scheme of things?
When we talk about COVID-19, we tend to really focus on the numbers, the statistics, and also about the political argument about who's at fault. I feel like a lot of times we lose sight of the human story, the human tragedy during COVID. It's not a hoax. It's not a bad flu. You know, it can destroy individuals and families. Watch it to witness firsthand how horrible it is and how real it is. Let's not lose sight of how we can only survive this together as a community by being nice to each other, by helping each other out, which is being amply portrayed in this film.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. The next film in our documentary series is 76 Days. We're going to be screening it next week. And the director, Hao Wu, never really strays from those emotional moments of the pandemic. He managed the project remotely from his home base in New York. He had two field producers shooting hours and hours of footage there in China. And He would then take that and craft it into this powerful film, a film that isn't about geopolitics or infectious disease or really even governmental accountability. There are no interviews, no title cards, just scenes of healthcare workers, as Wu told us, trying to figure out how to live together in the middle of a catastrophe. And this was a concept, he says, he felt committed to right away.
Usually as a filmmaker, I tend to shy away from newsy topics like this because as a storyteller who is really interested in character-driven stories, a lot of times I wonder what more can I bring to a topic if that topic has been well covered by news media. But I think with COVID-19, it has become personal for most of the people on this planet. So in December 2019, we made a plan to travel from New York to Shanghai to spend Chinese New Year with my family. My partner and I, we live in New York with our two kids. My parents are staying with my sister's family in Shanghai. Both my parents have late-stage cancer. So I really wanted to bring our kids back and spend as much time with them as possible during the Chinese holiday. And we made the plan to travel on January 23rd, 2020. And 24 hours before our departure, we learned about Chinese government was putting Wuhan under official lockdown. And that really shocked me and all the Chinese people I know. Because we had heard about this outbreak of unknown pneumonia that's kind of similar to SARS in Wuhan, but we didn't know that much at the beginning of January. So we're like, for the government to shut Wuhan, a city of 11 million people down, did it mean that the government knew what it was doing and it had things under control? Or did it mean that it had completely lost control? That's why it was frenetically trying to do anything extreme to try to control this. But so in the end, I traveled to Shanghai by myself. And so, my partner, our two kids stayed behind in New York. And spending Chinese New Year in Shanghai was such an eerie experience in 2020. Even though Shanghai, is pretty far from Wuhan, but as soon as Wuhan was put under lockdown, the rest of China, voluntarily went into shutdown as well. So Shanghai is China's largest city with 21 million people. And Chinese New Year is China's busiest, largest family holiday. But there were nobody on the street. It was like so eerie. So that really left a strong impression on me. And then during Chinese New Year, everybody locked themselves inside. All we did was scrolling through social media, trying to figure out what was happening in Wuhan. And what we learned was like it was absolutely horrible. It's like hell on earth. And it was a lot of desperation in that city. So as soon as I came back to the U.S. in early February, when the U.S. network approached me, asked me if I wanted to do a film about this, I was like, yeah, of course. I wanted to find out what happened. Even though later on the U.S. network dropped out, I continued on independently.
But the thing that you wanted to understand wasn't necessarily what a mainstream journalist had wanted to understand. You didn't want to document it necessarily as a journalist. You're an artist. You're a filmmaker. It seems like your interest in it was maybe different. Is that fair to say?
At the very beginning, I think my instinct was a little bit more investigative because there were so many questions, right? I mean, why did it become so bad, especially after China has suffered through the SARS outbreak, which was already horrible? So why did it become so bad? So my first instinct was definitely trying to look for answers to those questions. But really quickly, after I started researching, I talked to investigative journalists in China, breaking a lot of the heavy-hitting stories at the beginning of the lockdown. I also talked to reporters at New York Times and Wall Street Journal who are covering the Wuhan lockdown. It quickly became obvious to me, there was some story that's just going to be really difficult to find answers, like at what level of the government that made the decision to cover this up in the very, very beginning, right? Yeah. And also, who was patient number one? patient zero. Who was, when did this outbreak actually start? So those are the things I quickly concluded would take a long time, if ever, to be able to find answers for. So I just started really speaking to filmmakers, independent filmmakers who and reporters who had started filming in Wuhan, and try to talk to them, look at the footages, and just trying to figure out whether I could collaborate with them, even remotely, to make a film about the human experience during that lockdown.
You talked about how you had these discussions then about how you were going to tell the story. And you've said something I wanted to ask you about, in the end, you decided not to just focus on news clips and political developments and, you know, statistics and interviews and those kinds of things. You made this conscious decision to make it very much a verite film. And you said you made this decision to make the film, here's how you put it, smaller. Explain what you meant. Take us through your sort of thought process.
Yeah, I mean, right now it's basically looking back and trying to figure out my creative decision process. But when it happened, obviously it's one small decision after another. But now if I have to look back, I guess a couple of things happened. One is that as documentary filmmakers, we sometimes are limited by the footage we have access to.
Yeah.
So the two co-directors I ended up working with, they have shot such wonderful raw footage in the eye of the storm that can take viewers right to the front line to witness firsthand what was happening, right, with COVID-19. So naturally, as we went into post-production process, we wanted to preserve as much unique value about this footage as possible. We don't want to add anything extraneous to distract viewers from feeling the power of the footage itself. And secondly, I think as I started making this film through production and post-production, my thinking around this pandemic was evolving the whole time. Because, you know, at the very beginning, like the rest of China, as a Chinese filmmaker, Chinese American filmmaker, obviously I was really critical of the Chinese government's handling of the crisis at the beginning. But then later on, as we gradually saw other countries also fumble in their responses, especially when the pandemic hit New York, how the U.S. government, supposedly the best democracy in the world, with the best public health system in the world, how we fumbled so bad 2 months after Wuhan went into lockdown. We still mismanaged it. So that also just like reminded me, maybe it's too soon to draw any conclusion about any government's handling of this crisis. So let's just focus on what the footage can show to the viewers. Let's focus on the human stories that's shining through this footage. So let's focus on the small details.
When you first saw that footage, when it first came back, those early rushes, talk about what you were seeing, how you reacted to those first images, because you said it wasn't fascinating, wasn't the right word. You were entranced. Now, explain that.
I felt entranced because up till mid-February, before I started seeing the first batch of rushes, I had been reading extensively about, the coronavirus. I watched some phone videos that have been shared on Chinese social media. But it still feel like it's almost like a news story rather than a human story, because I'm pretty far away from those little bits of, write-ups or phone videos. When I saw the rushes for the first time, that was the first opportunity I had to immerse myself, to be inside a hospital for such an extended period of time, to see raw human emotions as if I was right there with those people, with the patients and with the medical workers. I remember I was both crying and also shaking at the same time because it was so powerful.
There's a moment I wonder if you wouldn't mind taking us through as staff members at this particular Wuhan hospital, care workers, are trying to urge patients who are behind a door, they're barring this door as these people who are desperate, they're cold, they're complaining. They're trying to say, look, be patient. We can't take you all at once. We have to take you sort of, you know, one or two, you know, at a time, trying to sort of be talk some sense into them, to just relax, to be patient. Take us through that moment, because that was a really powerful scene in the sense that you got an idea that chaos could really break out at any moment.
That scene happened in the early days of the lockdown. During the lockdown, the government gradually converted all hospitals in Wuhan into what they call a fever hospital, basically only admitting COVID patients. But at the beginning of the lockdown, a lot of hospitals were short on equipment, on PPEs. So in that scene, a group of medical workers were preparing to open up a new floor to COVID patients. And also at that time, the residents of Wuhan were really, really scared. They knew their city had been shut down and they couldn't leave the city at all. And then when they have any kind of fever symptom, they just wanted to rush to the hospital to make sure they will be taken care of and also to make sure they stay away from their own families. So there was a lot of desperation on the part of the patients. But also at the same time, the medical workers were dealing with this for the very first time. They had such limited experience. So they were panicking. So there's panic on both sides of the door. And so the patients wanted to rush in and to what they perceived to be safety, whereas the medical workers want to make sure the patients being admitted in an orderly process, so they have better control and management of this process. So in the end, there's a, you know, the nurses started screaming at the patient, just say, step back, step back. If you keep on pushing forward, we're going to close the door, not admitting anyone. Obviously, she didn't mean it, but just speaks to the panic and early days of the lockdown.
Hao Wu, his film is 76 Days. You can join us for an online screening of the film next Tuesday. That's January 19th at 7 p.m. We'll have details about it on our website, radiowest.org. We'll take a break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West.
Tuesday marks the start of the Utah legislative session. I'm Sonia Hudson.
I'm Emily Means. And we're the hosts of KUER's weekly politics podcast, 45 Days. In our first episode of the year, we're answering questions about how to govern during a public health crisis, and we have a sneak peek of what to expect in the session.
That's this week's 45 Days from KUER News. Subscribe for free wherever you listen to podcasts, or just go to 45days.org.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're profiling the latest film in our documentary series, our partnership with the Utah Film Center. Next week, we're going to be screening the director Hao Wu's story of those first 76 days of the COVID-19 pandemic in Wuhan, China. This is right as the lockdown begins, and Wu worked with these producers in the city to coordinate this footage. Hao Wu is with us today. His film is called 76 Days. What was it like to direct a film like this remotely? I mean, that's another really unique challenge, it seems. You have two filmmakers, two photographers, Wixi Chen and a journalist we just know as Anonymous there. Are you able to communicate with them much about what else you want, give them any guidance about who to follow? Or, I mean, what could you do at that point?
The way we collaborated during production was, first of all, I never met my two co-directors, never in person. We only had with each one of them so far, even up until today, I only have one like video call with either of them. Mm. The rest of it is mostly through, you know, Signal, Telegram, those kind of secure messaging app, or sometimes over voice chats. Wow. So they, every day, and because they couldn't take their equipments out, they had to leave their equipments inside the contamination zone every day. So every night after they take their discs out of their camera, they would go back to their hotel and upload it to a cloud service in China as backup. And then since they shared their logins with me, I would start downloading the rushes in New York. But because the Great Firewall, the download speed was pretty slow. So I'm always a few days behind in terms of reviewing the rushes and giving them some feedback. So the kind of discussion we had at the very, very beginning was more around what types of characters could be interesting. And then once I saw the rushes, I would spend more time with this character instead of the other one, because this character shows more promise as a sort of quote unquote main character in the film. There's also some discussion about how to best cover the scene, right? I mean, give me some more close-up of the clocks, of the machine, of the beeping, capture more beeping of the sound, that kind of more detailed discussion. But overall, I think my two co-directors made a lot of the directing decisions on site, because a lot of time, by the time I review the rushes, give them feedback, the patient might be moved away to a different hospital. The patient might, some of them had even died by the time we, basically making it impossible to do any follow-up filming.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I left it to them to make a lot of the day-to-day filming decisions. But we did discuss, sometimes get outside of the hospital, take some, go film some other characters. But in the end, we actually didn't use that much footage we shot outside of the hospital.
Which I think was the right call, in the sense that it did seem, and I've seen it described this way at moments, claustrophobic and disorienting. There was a review by the LA Times that I liked. It said that when we first, it's like experiencing what it was like for those of us in those early days of the pandemic, going to the grocery store with your mask. Like, yep. It takes some getting used to, and you're yep. You're just like, how are you supposed to breathe this way? And it just seems weird to see things, and then you settle in. And in some ways, that was the experience of this film for people watching it, I think. It certainly was for me.
Absolutely. I think the way we approach editing of this film is that, as you mentioned earlier, we didn't put any date markers, right? Only at the beginning and the very end. We didn't put any... We put a couple of date markers in between, but mostly we didn't track how the outbreak was going, yeah. How the statistics were happening inside of Wuhan, because we primarily wanted the viewer to go through this emotional journey, to emotionally experience this from the early panic and fear to, just things being put under control. And then at the very end, looking back and just the pain over the big loss the city and the society had suffered.
One thing that must have been a challenge for you as a storyteller, and something we all have to experience right now, is how difficult it is to connect with a person at first when you can't see their face fully. You can't see their expressions and their features. You can't even see their bodies in some ways because they're shrouded behind masks and shields and goggles and all these protective layers. Talk a little bit about that, because that is one of the things we have to connect to these characters in this film. But all we see are their eyes in some ways, and barely that. That was such an interesting challenge.
Yeah, that's something I didn't think too much about doing editing, because they all had, for all the medical workers, they all had their names written in Chinese on the back of their hazmat suits. So since I read Chinese, I could track who is whom, right, as I went through editing. I just picked out the shots and the scenes that moved me the most. So doing editing, I was mostly following my emotional and artistic instinct. I wasn't rationally planning to edit this way or that way. But then once I finished a rough cut, once I started showing, doing test screenings, obviously remotely, to filmmaker friends of mine, I was nicely surprised. They ask the same question you ask. And also, I was even more nicely surprised that they could track the characters throughout the film. I think for two reasons. One is that since we cannot see their faces, we pay more attention to their gestures, to their actions, right?
Yeah.
And to how they say things, the tone in their voices, become much more sensitive to that, because naturally in any film, we tend to just look at the faces, trying to visually pick out the emotions, right? But right now, all we can have is through their voices and through, you know, our own interpretation, what their action actually meant. Secondly, I feel doing editing, my co-director and I, we talk about this, we intentionally simplify the story, simplify each character to have the character only on one particular story beat. For example, the young couple is all about reuniting with their baby.
Yeah.
That's all they care about. And for the head female nurse, it's all about cleaning the personal effects of the dead and trying to return them to the families later on, right? So because every time you see a particular character, even though you cannot see their faces, but through their action, you could tell that doing what they're doing is connected to that specific story beat. So that sort of help viewers track these characters throughout the film, even though you cannot see any of the faces most of the time.
Right. One of the things that I noticed about it is a lot of emotion is conveyed, and some of the more powerful moments, just through touch. Grips, for example, there is a really powerful moment, and it's not a long moment, but there's a male nurse who's holding hands with an older lady. Just sort of stroking her hand, touching her. And we see a lot of that, and a lot of that emotion is conveyed, as you said, through gesture and touch.
I think that's all they could do at that time. Everybody was so covered up, right? Layer upon layers of PPEs. The only thing we can do is squeeze each other's hand. That pressure can be transmitted somehow. And that's the only thing they could do a lot of times.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the characters in the film. You mentioned a couple that has a baby. We'll get back to that in a moment here. But it seemed like, and I'm not sure if there is any one main character, but the one that was striking for me was a female nurse named Yong Li. We see her at the beginning. She goes away from a time, then she returns. And it seems like in some ways, maybe she's just one of those characters, as you're looking at the rushes as they're coming, that you just see as she's a character. She's an important character. Talk a little bit about the kind of the role she plays in the film.
This film was a hard film to edit because my two co-directors, when they were filming, they didn't know which characters, the characters' backstories at all, the best stories.
Right.
They were thrown inside almost like a war zone, right?
Yeah,
things
yeah.
are happening around them. They started filming. And we didn't know Yong Li's story could be interesting until almost pretty late, like in March, the lockdown was about to be lifted. Because if you analyze the film, Yong Li appeared like four times only. For a traditional documentary, that would not, get her to become a main character, right, in the traditional sense. But just her story is so powerful. Once I started looking through the footage, thinking about how to edit, I immediately talked to my co-director and said, no, she's a great character. We need to go back and making sure we capture the scene when she returned the phones and personal effects to the family. And that's what my co-director did. Because her story is just so powerful, viewers will be left with a strong impression of her. And so I think they tend to think Yong Li is a main character who appear, repetitively throughout the film. But actually, that's not the case.
Yeah. Well, one of the things you've said is that in some ways, it's a film about all healthcare workers, not just those in four hospitals in Wuhan that you were able to capture. And I'm thinking about the simple moments conveyed in the film, drawings, sayings and faces and images that they drew on people's protective clothing, not just the names, but they were doing smiley faces on, rubber gloves, you know, small ways to make people feel safe and comfortable. And it, I got a sense that this is how healthcare workers just are, and in a way that I never really had thought of before.
Yeah, even in such dire circumstances, yeah. Life continues, right? As soon as the situation stabilized in Wuhan, as soon as the medical workers, they have more time instead of just rushing to resuscitate one patient after another. Once they had more time in their hands, they spend more time with their patients, first of all. Secondly, they're also trying to figure out ways to, you know, alleviate the boredom and also and trying to, you know, have some moments of cheerfulness among themselves. That's just how, I guess that's how resilient we can be, even in such circumstances. And that happened in the U.S. as well, right? We've seen photos and in New York in particular, because I was in New York when the first wave hit here. I have friends who are doctors in the hospitals. Those are very similar stories I heard from the early panic to later on, how they tried to just trying to comfort each other through these kind of humorous moments.
The idea of it being a war zone, you know, seeming like a war zone is absolutely the feel of it, certainly early on. And we're seeing, we mentioned Yang Li, that nurse, who is really determined to return these phones and these ID cards to these people who have died, to their families. And there's this moment where some of the phones are still ringing. And one of them has a screen that says 31 unread messages. That was a really powerful moment.
In the beginning of the lockdown, when things were so chaotic, there were so many people dying in the hospitals, you could see that there are boxes of phones left over like that. And some of them, like you said, they were still ringing, because in the early days of the chaos, a lot of times families don't know where their sick ones, which hospital were their sick ones ended up in, because, you know, one hospital will be full, and so the patients had to be turned away and be guided to another hospital. In the last scene of the film, when Yang Li was calling people to informing family to come to the hospital to pick up the personal effects, there was one short sentence that was breaking my heart. She called one family. She had to say over the phone that, "We're so sorry, we didn't get a chance to inform you." What she meant was they never actually informed the family where their sick one were. So the family had no idea their relative had passed away. So that's just like such a trauma and tragedy that happened in Wuhan in the early days.
You went all in on the verite element of the film, as we talked about before. You decided you're not going to do interviews. I mean, you did interviews, but you decided not to include them in the film. Like, you were committed to the idea that this is just this slice of life. This is a verite film. And I was thinking about the people, the filmmakers that may have influenced you. Frederick Wiseman, I have to say, came to my mind. What were the sort of artistic influences that were making you think about, that you were thinking about?
Sure. I mean, in early April, when I sat down for, you know, thinking, I'm going to start really editing this film rather than just looking at the rush, thinking about those images. Obviously, I never made a pure verite film before. All my past films were, I've made a personal documentary before, first-person narrative, and I've also made more, quote-unquote, more traditional documentary, which combines verite scenes with sit-down interviews, right? So with this film, obviously, it's very different because we cannot go back for pickups. And then very few people in this film actually can be regarded as a traditional main characters. So I was thinking, what other film, how can I make a film that can portray a group of characters, you know, and pay them tribute, and without going through the traditional documentary form. And after struggling with that for a couple of days, playing with the footage, and suddenly I just remember, oh, I need to go back and check Frederick Weisman's films. So I went back to check. The film I watched in depth was Monrovia in Indiana. That film was so beautiful. I just realized, see, here's an inspiration. My film don't necessarily need to have a traditional main character that can carry the story through. It can just be a good portrayal or composite of the situation of what's happening during the lockdown. So once I reached that, you know, sort of decision, you just suddenly feel very free to explore the form.
Tell us about the old man, the role that he plays. He's an old fisherman, an elderly man who is there in the hospital, and he wants out. He's constantly looking for a way to escape, and he's constantly tormenting the healthcare workers who are at moments frustrated with him, but also then indulge him. I think you've described him as playing a role of kind of helping to tie the film together in some way.
If anything, he's the only main character we have because he appeared throughout the film. I remember watching him, was like, this old guy is just so quirky. I like that. He's the only character almost in the film that's bringing some needed humor to such a dire situation.
Yeah.
He was so difficult to deal with for the medical workers, and they actually reported him to the police. They wanted the police to take him away. They couldn't deal with him anymore because during the lockdown inside the hospitals, all patients were confined to their respective hospital rooms. They couldn't get out of the room. They couldn't take walks in the hallway because to avoid any cross-infection. Remember, this is at the beginning of the pandemic, and even doctors didn't know whether cross-infection was a thing they should be afraid or not. But then I think in China, they just want to be extra careful, so nobody could walk around. He's the only one who always pushed the door open, who broke through because he wanted to go home. He wanted to go home. He didn't want to stay in the hospital. Hmm. But I'm not going to, you know, spoil all the detail here.
Good.
In the end, strangely, he found home inside the hospital and he didn't want to go home anymore. So that's what I found so interesting, that life, once again, continues, you know, even for patients themselves and for medical workers, they continue to have discoveries of ways of to establish new relationships, even inside a COVID hospital.
You cover the whole arc of human life in the film. There's this elderly man, you know, in the last years of his life, surely. There's a middle-aged couple, both in the hospital, trying to pass notes to each other. There's a couple having a baby, and of course, then there's the birth of this baby, which really completes that arc. You know, the birth of a baby there. I mean, it's all in the film.
Yeah, there are so many, you know, circles, right? There's death and birth, and wanting desperately to get inside a hospital and being released from the hospital at the end of. And also of the city be completely empty, a city completely dead at the beginning, and the city coming back to life as well. So there are many, many circles of life in this film.
Yeah. Well, we should explain that, at least as I understand it, you were able to work with these two filmmakers remotely for a time. But then somewhere in the process, by the end of March or something like that, the tensions between the U.S. and China start to grow. And that partnership stopped working. They had to get out of the project, I guess.
I think they were unsure of where I wanted to take the film, what my creative intentions were at that time, since we never collaborated before.
Yeah.
And so for a period of time, they were like, we're not sure we want to collaborate with you just because the story is so sensitive. Any COVID story in China has become sensitive. Mm-hmm. And everybody's been warned not to collaborate with anyone outside of China. I guess at that time, I didn't have, I no longer had a film, and no longer had a project to work on. But in the end, I just like, you know, I had nothing else to do. So I started editing the film and trying to dig through the footage to see, first of all, do I have a film there?
Yeah.
And secondly, if I can, you know, edit a rough cut quickly enough to show them, I actually value how they were capturing the footage on the front line. We were in sync in terms of wanting to tell small, quote unquote, small stories, small human stories on the front line. And yeah, that's what I did. I spent 2 months editing a rough cut. And once I showed it to them, they recognized where I wanted to go with the film, and they agree. And we started collaborating again.
Huh. So I was wondering what you see as, and this is a silly question to ask an artist about a piece of art, but like, how do you see the purpose of the film? Like, I've seen it described as a kind of a piece of history. I've seen it described as preserving a chapter in this history. Not that it has to serve a necessarily a discrete purpose, but do you see it in that way as preserving a moment, as having a purpose in that sense?
Like you said, as artists, we create art because we're motivated to.
Yeah.
But for me, my motivation has been primarily emotional. I just remember back in March and April, I think the entire world was scared. And my grandpa passed away in early March from cancer. And, you know, he passed away 1 month after his diagnosis, really fast. Because of the travel restriction between U.S. and China, I couldn't even go back to China to say goodbye to him. So I was going through a lot of guilt. I was feeling really depressed with the way things are, not just with the pandemic, but also politically between U.S. and China, and also domestically within the U.S. itself. So for me, going through this, making this film, it's more about that I needed this. I needed to preserve some kind of the emotional memories of what went through, to help me remember my grandfather, to remember the difficulty for us to even find a hospital for him, and also to remember the sadness of not being able to say goodbye to him. So for me, that's primarily personal reason. But obviously, I also wanted to preserve what the country of China went through, because I definitely felt the early confusion, anger, and also I definitely felt the later sense of relief as the outbreak was put under control. But And the very end, when people gather together to mourn the dead, the sense of immense loss, the sense of tremendous sadness, and don't want to forget. So I guess there are a lot of personal reasons I made this film. But then, you know, for a film critic or a historian to look at this, I hope this film can become a record in history about this COVID-19 pandemic.
One of the things you've said is that you hope that the film shows human beings how they help each other, how they're kind to each other, even in catastrophes. And there's this moment I wanted to ask you about when a nurse, I think it's a male nurse, says to someone who has no access to their family, it's a patient there, "We're your family. Those of us here in this chaotic environment, we healthcare workers who you can barely see because of our protective layers and shields and masks, we're your family." And that seemed to sort of illustrate a large picture here, at least something really hopeful.
Absolutely. I think a lot of people ask me during interviews what scene was personally the most moving for me. I always go back to the scene you just described. For me, I think because every viewer has his or her own personal favorite scenes, right? And not every viewer can agree on that. But for me personally, that's the most moving moment, because that's just so, like you said, it's such a fleeting moment. It's such a small gesture, but it says so much about during COVID, I personally feel the most horrible thing about COVID is that a lot of patients, they die alone. And they die so scared without their family around them to comfort them. That's the most horrible way to go for me. So that little hand-holding and also those simple words, where are your family? It's just like so comforting to me, especially whenever I think about I wasn't able to say goodbye to my own grandpa, be able to hold his hand as he lay on his deathbed feeling scared.
What is it you want the film to reveal then about humankind? Because you've talked about how, you know, every once in a while we are going to have to live through a crisis like this. So in part, you're interested in how we do that, I guess, what this may reveal about that. So we saw lovely things in Wuhan that you show us in that film, but we also saw people hoarding toilet paper and fighting in grocery stores over bottled water throughout the world, and people refusing to wear masks or even believe in the seriousness of this virus. How are you now sort of reconciling those two things?
That's a hard one to answer. I guess that's just pretty much like human nature, right? We all have our good side and our bad side. And also, based on my reading, I spent a lot of time reading about past pandemics. It just seems that every pandemic seemed to bring out some of the worst sides of us. In every pandemic, there's always scapegoating going on. In the Black Death, it was the Jews. And, you know, during the AIDS pandemic, and, you know, a lot of times the queer community got blamed. And it's... people wanted to think that we did nothing wrong. It's the other people who brought this onto us. But the problem with virus, with pandemic, is that it doesn't care about your political leanings. It doesn't care about where you live. It's just very cold, hard fact that the virus is going to find its way to impact our lives. So, yeah, I think that's why I guess... by no means 76 days is a authoritative, comprehensive account of what happened in Wuhan during those 76 days. This is, like I said before, this is a small film about, you know, a group of people trying to survive in the hospitals. There are other films coming out about the Wuhan lockdown in 2021. But at the same time, I do hope to remind people not to lose hope, not to, you know, become despair just because we see the ugly side of human nature during pandemics. There are also good things we have, not just in Wuhan, but also everywhere, right, in the world. Let's just also try to see some of that as well and try to help each other.
You don't want us to forget what we've been going through, what we went through.
Absolutely not. I mean, another thing about my understanding of past pandemic is that once it's over, we tend to forget about it. After the Spanish flu, we had the roaring 20s, right? People were partying in the 20s. I just hope this time we don't forget the lesson. We don't forget the pain. We don't forget about the tragedy. I hope we can do better next time.
Hao Wu, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
That's Hao Wu. He's director of the documentary 76 Days, which we're going to be screening next week as part of our partnership with the Utah Film Center. We're screening it on Tuesday, the 19th at 7 p.m. It's an online screening. You can get details about it on our website, radiowest.org. Radio West is a production of KUER. You can subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. And as always, we'd love to hear from you. We're on Twitter, at Radio West. Our intern is Aaron Camarga, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Tim Slover. Christy Miners is our executive producer. I'm Doug Fabrizio.